Well, it's one thing to live the life of a paraplegic, but it's another thing to be the one that inflicted the injury upon yourself. You are listening to the 100 Huntley Street podcast with your on-air team, Greg Musselman and Mark Masry. So good to have you in studio today, Greg.
Oh, it's good to be here and excited to share the story of Emma, not because of the things that she went through, but just the remarkable spirit that she has. I mean, you know, we at the end of the year have our interview that we pick as the top interview of the year, and thus far, this is the one that has impacted me the most. She reminds me a lot of my youngest daughter, Amelia. In fact, when I sent the link to the interview, Amelia said, "Yeah, Dad, that looks a lot like me." And I think like Amelia, Emma looked like everything was going well from the outside. You know, she's a cheerleader. She's smart. She's a nice looking girl, modeling and good home. But yet there was some things going on. And I think what we're going to find with this program today, Mark, is that a decision that we can make at a low point can have ramifications for our entire life.
Yeah, it's fascinating to, and you hear this story time and time again, how everything can appear okay on the surface, as was the case in Emma's life. Her own family didn't know what she was facing. And it is often the case for people that are dealing with suicide ideation. But to know that she is able to come out the other side, and like you said, the impact that she's having, we don't want to give too much of the story away. And I'm not surprised, Greg, that this is going to be one of your favorites for the year if you have to choose one. But yeah, it's such an important conversation to be had. And it's really, really, we're talking at pandemic levels, especially with young people.
Absolutely. And I mean, we see in the U.S. and in Canada as well, and social media plays into this because a lot of young folks especially are very vulnerable, you know, body size, you know, the bullying that goes online. I mean, people are real brave when it comes to, you know, talking through their computer to people and putting them down.
Social pressures, online pressures.
Oh yeah. If you're struggling in school, you're not the smartest kid, or maybe you're not a good athlete, or, you know, whatever maybe you think is the norm. And the reality is, Mark, none of us have it all together. I mean, sometimes I'll even look at my own Facebook page and I'm going, man, I looks like I've got the perfect life. And I have to put the odd thing in there to make sure people realize that I don't have that. But again, in Emma's case, things were really going well in life. But again, the deep, you know, some of the darkness that was in her, you know, eventually, you know, affected her in a way. And I don't know if you've dealt with depression in your lifetime, but there's times that I have, and I used to try to cover it up, you know, in career or whatever. But you hit those real dark points and you go, what's the point? Why would I want to continue on? Even though it's an irrational thought, but it is real to the person that is dealing with that.
It is real. It is it's as painful, I've heard described, as cutting your finger or having a broken bone in your body. That pain is as physical and as real to the person experiencing it. Well, without giving away any more of this story, I think we should go, Greg, to your interview with Emma Benoit.
It was the summer before her final year of high school, and from the outside, things looked like they're going really well for Emma Benoit. She was a popular cheerleader, great grades in school, had a loving and supportive family, tons of friends. But on the inside, Emma was filled with depression and anxiety, and that led to a suicide attempt in June of 2017 that would have lasting effects. Emma, welcome to 100 Huntley Street.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So before we talk about some of the challenges you faced, let's go back into your childhood. Growing up in Louisiana, what was it like?
Oh, it was the best childhood. I grew up with one older brother, whom I've always been super close with. I think I can actually recall maybe one or two times that we've ever fought. So I was loving life as a kid, super spunky, charismatic, rambunctious little kid. I was always seeking attention, always performing for my family, always putting on shows. I loved to cheer. I really got into cheerleading at a very young age. So my childhood was pretty typical. It was very fun, always doing something, whether that was a cheerleading competition or a baseball tournament for my brother. It was nonstop, always doing something, constantly hectic, but very joyful, very, very joyful childhood.
Okay, so you've got this great childhood growing up. Sounds like a lot of fun. But on the inside, there were some things going on. Why do you think you were struggling?
My anxiety really started to manifest in elementary school. I can recall feeling insecure and super anxious and nervous to be around others, especially adults. And from there, I just kept all of those feelings within myself, because growing up in the area that I grew up in, mental health was not something that was talked about. I honestly had never even heard the words mental and health used together prior to my own suicide attempt. So for me, that exposure was none. And I didn't know what mental health was, and I didn't know what these feelings that I was having were or what they meant. And so I certainly never felt comfortable expressing these feelings with anyone. And I also fell victim to the stigma. I felt like I was in the wrong for feeling this way because of my life, because of that picture perfect life that I just got done explaining. So for me, all of those feelings really started to manifest when I was a young kid, but I was very hesitant to expressing those feelings because of the stigma.
Yeah, and I know the stigma is still there. I mean, we are working extremely hard, you know, in this program. I know you are as well, to, you know, just help people that are struggling with that to know that, you know what, you're not the only one going through this, but that's what your reality was. So let's go back to a very painful day for you, your family, your friends, June 7th, 2017. You made a decision that you didn't want to live anymore. So what was kind of going on in your mind at that time to think that, you know, I just can't do this anymore?
Well, there were so many things going through my mind during that time. But I think to give some context, 3 days prior to my suicide attempt, I was in New York City on a modeling trip. And I had gotten asked to be a part of this trip as a senior rep with a local photographer. And so getting this opportunity to be a part of this group of girls, to be modeling in New York City, was a huge confidence boost for me during a time when I was at my lowest, really struggling. I had decided that I wasn't going to cheer my senior year. I had completely lost that passion altogether. And I was really starting to spiral into a deep, dark position mentally. But I got this opportunity to be a part of this trip. And so getting to be a part of that trip, I felt like all of my joy had fully returned. And for the first time in a long time, I didn't feel weighed down by any of the pressures or stressors or lies that I had been maintaining back at home. And so I felt free. I felt like myself again. And being on that trip revealed to me the cloud of depression that I had been living under, because I got to experience how good life could be versus what I had actually been living back at home. And so having that trip happen and then coming home, it was almost like I had fallen from the cloud and I hit rock bottom. And the day I attempted suicide was the day that I had felt the most exhaustion from living and the most hopelessness that I had ever felt.
Yeah, I mean, you're a young lady, you're smart, you're beautiful, you have all these things going, and yet that inward struggle was going on. And I know this is always hard to ask, but how did you decide to end your life?
So I had a million and one thoughts racing in my head, and it was really quick, the shift from my thoughts going from suicidal ideation thinking to active suicidal thinking. I would say it was in a matter of minutes that my thoughts transitioned into active suicidal thoughts. And I had all of the thoughts of ways to do it and my options. But I decided to use a firearm to attempt suicide. And that left me with some pretty permanent injuries.
Wow. I mean, it came on so fast. I mean, that's the scary part. I mean, any person, you know, thinking about ending their life, it's tragic, but going from this high to this low, just unbelievable that it can happen so quickly. But your attempt, we thank the Lord that you were not successful. Were you upset that you realized that you were still alive?
No, actually, I had an opposite reaction. I was very regretful that I had made the attempt to take my life. It was like all of the things that I wished would have come to the surface of my brain before making that decision immediately came rushing to the surface after the decision was made. And so I was filled with instant regret, and I was basically reminded of all of the reasons that I did have to live, all of the reasons that I did have hope, and only when it was nearly too late.
Well, again, we're so grateful. And I know your family, I mean, I can't imagine, you know, as being a dad of, you know, four children and now grandchildren, and you know, and I've had people in my life that have lost their lives through suicide. But as you mentioned, there was some permanent damage done. Your spinal cord was injured. You were left paralyzed. Of course, you're working on it. We'll talk more about how you're coming through your recovery. But how did you come to grips with that?
So that journey in and of itself is totally separate in my eyes. I view the physical journey different than the emotional and mental journey. I would say initially when I learned that I was diagnosed quadriplegic, which is essentially paralyzed, I was heartbroken, devastated, and immediately angry with myself for having put myself in this position. And it was a really challenging journey to walk through, being that I was the one that gave myself this injury in a way. I almost felt like a victim and a perpetrator all at the same time in my own head. But I really fully believe that that part of my emotional journey did lead me to my spiritual journey and help me to find and develop my faith in God, because I felt so grateful to still be alive. But then on the flip side, I felt angry and confused and disappointed and honestly just all over again hopeless, because all of my abilities had been taken from me. Only now I wanted to be alive. So it was a real challenging journey, to say the least. But like I said, I really believe that having walked that journey, it strengthened my faith in God.
Well, and I was going to ask you just about how that has, you know, revitalized you and just gone deeper in your faith in God, and how that obviously that you would have to then understand about God's forgiveness. Because, you know, I've talked to people that have had different kinds of injuries, you know, car accidents, you know, falling off, you know, roof or something like that. And, you know, those things happen, but because you were the cause of it. So how did you protect yourself then from, you know, going back into this dark place of depression and anxiety?
I would say for me, it was seemingly a lot easier than it is for most. I was filled with so much regret, and I knew that it was not the decision that I wanted to make. And I just knew that I would never again allow myself to get to that point. And I also felt how many people around me were waiting and willing to support me through whatever it was that I was going through. So not only feeling that regret and being grateful to still be alive after a typically fatal injury, feeling and seeing the support and the people in my life, that made living and fighting through this injury so much more worth it to me, because I really felt and saw just how many people were there in my life and how many people would genuinely be affected had I no longer been here.
Yeah, that's the one thing about suicide and depression. Sometimes we lose, you know, the fact that there are people that really love and care for us. And unfortunately, you know, it takes some, in your case, something pretty cataclysmic to sort of get that attention. And you look around and go, wow, I've got amazing friends and family and people that love me. And what I appreciate you about Emma, though, is what you've done is, you know, just a few months after you go through this, you start blogging, you're chronicling your story through video, not only sharing your recovery journey, but you also want to be a help to other struggling teens.
Absolutely. So when I initially had come home from the hospital, I was brought back to the place where the attempt happened. And so I was reminded of every emotion, everything that happened and transpired that day. And I was hit again, and I was kind of spiraling back into a state of depression. This time, though, the difference was that I was open and vocal with my parents and my loved ones about my feelings. So I was getting support through that this time. But I certainly was feeling the residual effects of this incident that happened to all of us. And so I needed an outlet, and my mom suggested blogging. She had been suggesting that I try to journal and use that as a way to express my feelings. But the blogging option just spoke to me. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this. And so I prayed on it a little bit. I asked God for some guidance and just some clarity as to what was going on within me and what this desire was to share this story. And so I had the direction and it was clear. And so I decided to start blogging. And I was encouraged to publish those blogs on a website. And in doing so, it really allowed me to see how many people were struggling like I was, but in silence. And so seeing that problem really fueled this fire within me to not stop talking about this, to actively advocate for mental health and for suicide prevention, suicide awareness. And so I just kind of grabbed the reins of this and just went full throttle with it. And the blogs actually were recognized by a filmmaker, and he decided to take this journey along with me and wanted to film my journey. So we started filming 8 months after I attempted. So not even a full year after my attempt that I started chronicling my journey through videos and blogs and all the things.
Yeah, one of the documentary, My Ascension, and, you know, watching, you know, a clip from it is your dad. You know, and again, as a dad, and he's just saying we had no idea. And I think that one of the things that, you know, just want to even say to parents and those close to those that do try to take their life by suicide, sometimes there's just not any signs there because of the stigma, as Emma was talking about earlier. But that must be painful in some ways for you, Emma, when you see your dad. I'm a dad. I get emotional even when I see these things because he loves you so much, and he's seen, I guess, didn't realize the pain that you were dealing with.
Yeah, that was probably one of the hardest parts about this entire journey, was having to sit with my mom and dad and feel their pain and fully have to try to understand what it must be like for them, because both of them, it's shown in the documentary that neither of them had a single clue how greatly I was struggling or even that I was struggling. And so that was a journey in and of itself. But what I will say, I feel like made our journey seamless was the fact that none of us held back. I got off my chest what I wanted to get off my chest. They got off what they wanted. And we just had, for the first time really ever, genuine, authentic, vulnerable dialogue. And we all expressed things that I had never heard and they had never heard. And so it really opened up the door of great communication, but certainly it was one of the hardest things to have to experience, you know, the pain and hurt that I brought onto my mom and my dad and even my brother, the four of us. It was a journey that really affected us as a family unit, but certainly has made us stronger.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes we do have to go through often, you know, pain to reach that healing that we want to go, you know, want to see in the end. So again, the documentary, My Ascension. And again, you talk not only about your journey, but also youth suicide. And really, Emma, it is an epidemic. The last survey I saw was around 20 young adults take their lives every single day in the U.S. And I know it's also an issue here in Canada as well. You want to at least speak into that. And I guess if it's to prevent even just one teen from doing what you did, it would make it all worthwhile.
Absolutely. And that's something I said from the very beginning. If this doesn't help the masses, but it helps the one, I am totally okay with it. And that is a job well done, worthwhile for me. You never know what someone is going through. I know that's something that we all hear, but it's so true. And it really rings true in my journey and my story. So I really like to consider that whenever I'm doing this work, is you just never know what someone's journey looks like. And especially with the youth, I feel like the youth today have it much harder than the youth in the prior years, in the past generations. And their brains are not fully developed. They are lacking so much coping skills. They really are the group of people that are being hit the hardest by this epidemic. And so for me, being a previous youth struggling, I know what it's like, and I can relate to them on a different level because I was in their shoes less than 5 years ago. And so getting to do this work and getting to specifically talk to and help these young people through whatever it is they're going through, and just to let them know that it won't always be like this. There is hope. It does get better, you know, and to be that voice of reason for them, I take so much pride and honor in doing that. And I'm really grateful that my story has the power and the ability to really speak to people and resonate with people in a different way that really does help and bring change.
Well, Emma, your story is so powerful. You're a champion. We so appreciate you and all that, you know, you're bringing now. I know it's been a hard time for you, but, you know, the Bible talks about that God will even take negative things. You know, all things work together for good to those that love him and are called according to his purposes. Not that what you did was good, because it has left you with a permanent injury, but you are now in a place where you're being used by God in a powerful way. Where can people see your blogs and see your videos?
So the website that my blogs are on is called liferejuvenated.org, and the documentary website is myascension.us. And on Facebook, you can find me at myascension. And yeah, we're all over the internet, social media. Please like us on Facebook. It really helps us to keep this mission and movement going. So, and I'm really grateful for this opportunity.
Well, we're grateful to have you. And I know we're going to be hearing a lot more from you. Thank you, Emma. It was such a pleasure to meet you. And you're such an inspiring young lady. God bless you. And thank you for being here on 100 Huntley Street.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And God bless you all.
We're often quick to run to save ourselves, but we're often slow to stay to protect others. The Bible encourages us to pick one another up when we fall, leaving no one behind. If you're needing encouragement, call our 24/7 prayer lines at 1-866-273-4444 or visit crossroads.ca/24/7prayer. Anytime, anywhere, we're here for you.
Well, Greg, there are so many elements to Emma's story that are absolutely fascinating and heartbreaking at the same time, but I thought I couldn't believe it when she finally sat down to view the documentary that was made about her story, that she actually had to, like, witness her parents experience some of the stuff that she had gone through in years prior for the first time. These were people that were living under the same roof as her, and they had no clue.
You know, the scary part is when I think about Emma, and I just really, you know, bonded with her. You know, we go, before we do the interview, we spend some time together, even though we were doing it online. And then, you know, afterward, talking to her and just, you know, kind of to see her heart. She's just such an incredible woman. And I mean, she's, her story has been featured in, you know, of course, on 100 Huntley Street, but other places as well, TED Talk and things like that, where she's sharing her story and the deepness, you know, darkness that was going on in her. And I know, even as my kids now, they're all adults, but they have shared with me, my, especially my daughters and even my son who went through depression, of the things they were going through, the bullying. And, you know, when I found out afterwards, I'm going, oh, I'm going to go find that guy that did that to my daughter. And I know that, you know, again, we're to love people. And I'll tell you one story that was really neat is when my daughter Sarah was bullied years later, I came up and apologized. I think that happened to my daughter Amelia as well. You know, so people do, you know, really stupid things and they can affect people. But in Emma's case, again, she comes back from this amazing event in New York where, you know, she's doing modeling and she was at the highest of highs. And then she comes back home and hits the lowest of lows and makes the decision that would forever change her life. And again, the part of the guilt, and you mentioned it off the top, is that she's not only, you know, paraplegic, and she is improving and she is working hard. In fact, one of the things she told me after the interview is that, you know, some of the, you know, the arms and the legs are starting to work a little bit better, but she doesn't have a lot of energy. So she gets tired easily, but she's moving forward and doing the best she can. But she also had to learn how to forgive herself because she was the one that did it, you know, the perpetrator as well as the victim. Mm-hmm. So that's been a challenge for her. So our encouragement, you know, as you're listening today, and maybe you are feeling some of those suicidal thoughts. I don't want to go on. Nobody would care. But Mark, that is just not true.
That's not true. It's a lie, and it's a lie that we often tell ourselves depending upon what we're facing, what we're coming through. And I always just want to tell people, even when we do these programs on Huntley Street, on the television, we just want to tell people, encourage you, one more day. Give it one more day. Life is living, worth living one more day. This is not the time for you to decide to check out. And there is so much to live for. And we want to encourage you that we have got prayer partners. They are not necessarily going to be trained counselors, but they are people that love Jesus and love people. And they will give you a number to an organization, to a hotline that will help walk you through whatever it is that has got you feeling in this pit of despair, feeling like life is not worth living. And perhaps death is the only other alternative, the best alternative for you. We want you to know that is not true. Just please hear us loud and clear. Mm-hmm. So we want to give you this phone number. It's only one number you have to remember, 1-866-273-4444. One more time, 1-866-273-4444. And I'm telling you, my friend, it's not an accident that you are listening to this podcast right now. If you are one of those people or you have a loved one that's going through a very deep depression that seems like they're having a hard time pulling themselves out of it, call. You can call on behalf of someone else, and we will pray with you for that person and agree with you that God will get a hold of their lives, fill their hearts with His love, and give them a sense of purpose and meaning and set them on a track towards living.
Yeah, and I would also just echo what Mark said. Yeah, give us a call today. Yeah, and maybe you have a family member that is dealing with depression, and or even ask those questions of your kids, like, how are you doing?
Right.
Because, I think all of us are pretty good at faking that we're doing okay, and there's things that are going on. And the other thing I'd encourage you to do is to share this podcast with somebody that is going through a difficult situation. Emma is a wonderful person. If she could roll the time back, she wouldn't have done what she did. But, she has found herself in this situation and is now using it to bring awareness. And one of the things I asked her, I said, with what you've gone through and all that you're dealing with, and as you go out there and you're talking to teens and doing television interviews, radio interviews, things like that. And she told me that even if it helps one person,
right,
then it's worth it. And maybe you're that one person, or maybe you're a friend of that person. So again, call our prayer lines, 1-866-273-4444.
Absolutely. And if you would like to see some of the resources that Emma has on her website, you should check out liferejuvenate.org. That's liferejuvenated.org. And she has made it her life purpose to throw out the line to rescue people from where she found herself and help prevent this thing that just seems to be just gripping the hearts of young people, especially for so many reasons that we've talked about. Thank you so much for joining us today. You've been listening to the 100 Huntley Street podcast with your team, Greg Musselman and Mark Masri. We're so glad you've joined us today, and make sure you keep coming back and tuning in for more. And like Greg said, share this podcast with someone you love.
Thank you for your ongoing support of Crossroads, a supporter-funded nonprofit organization and member of the Canadian Center of Christian Charities. Thanks to faithful people like you, we are able to continue producing 100 Huntley Street. You can write to Crossroads, P.O. Box 5100, Burlington, Ontario, L7R4M2, or visit crossroads.ca to learn more about our programs.